Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, for today, let's get right back into our men's panel discussion of Dickens' Great Expectations. So with me again in the studio today are Daryl Hope. Hello.
Hello. Good to be here.
And Jack Wood.
Hello, Mr. Sleep.
Hello, Jack. And George Haddad.
Hi.
Good to have you back. So panel, last time we talked about our impressions of the book as a whole. And today, since we have the men together, let's discuss the main male characters of the book. Now, last time, we got into some discussion on the characters, but I think there are probably about four, maybe positive characters we could talk about. And then if we have time, there's probably about three or four negative characters we can talk about. So let's start out with Pip. And obviously, I think... at least we were mentioning in our preparatory meetings that this is a Bildungsroman. I don't know if I'm saying that right. We have to get Mr. Hope to say this for us. Bildungsroman. It's a German word, and it means basically it's a coming-of-age novel, and obviously it does really surround one character, and we know that it's Pip is the main character because Pip is narrating the whole story about Pip, so... But that doesn't mean there aren't other really important characters. So it is interesting. We see Pip from the time he's seven. That's when the book opens. He's 7 years old. And then I think it's also been established that Pip, the narrator, is at 50. So you're having a 50-year-old talk about what starts to happen to a 7-year-old. But I think it's really interesting in the sense... The whole story about Pip is Dickens really does give us, I think, deep and incredible psychological insight into Pip. And it's amazing how Pip reveals it himself. And so if you I know people like to look at movies, but if you haven't seen any Great Expectations movies, don't go look at them until after you read the book. But you do, you know, Pip does start out, he's in a graveyard, and he's looking at the headstone of his father and his mother, and then he has brothers and sisters that also died. So you know that he started out in tragedy. And so, but then we see him, you know, go through these changes in his life. So, let's start talking about Pip and maybe we can start out and just try and answer the question. So what do we think about Pip in terms of, you know, what kind of man does he become? You know, how did his boyhood shape his manhood? You know, that kind of thing. So we'll start up with you, Derry.
Well, it's interesting, I think, with Pip, how his life, you know, the way it starts off, and he's in sort of, you know, the regular working class of Britain and not high society at all. And he sort of sees that as his trajectory where he'll be. And then by an event that takes place, which is really seems of really no consequence whatsoever, he helps this convict. And his help is really driven by fear more than anything. Right. But that becomes the one event that totally changes his life.
Right.
And it's interesting that you have now the main character whose life is totally changed as a very young child by an event that seems to have absolutely no consequence whatsoever to all the things happening on and going on around him. And that changes him dramatically in from the way he thinks and views himself and views everything around him. And that really sets the stage for all the growth and change that takes place in his life. So it's an event that happens in his youth that has really no consequence whatsoever, apparently so. And yet that is the one event that changes, that makes the whole change possible in his life.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of us could agree that I know even in my life there was I can probably go back to one incident that was a turning point in my life. And you know, even you know, I've written poetry over the years, and I actually have a poem written about it called Turning Points, and I just say everyone needs a turning point. But that doesn't mean the turning point is always positive. Right. You know, here he was. I mean, Dickens gives a great description, flips him upside down, shakes all the food out of him, scares the daylights out of him, and said he's going to cut out his liver and his heart if he doesn't go get him some food and a file. But that was the turning point in his life. It made his whole life, actually, in some ways, well, I guess we could say better. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I think it definitely is a big part of his life. But I would disagree and say it's the biggest thing that changes him as a person. I would say that moment is when he visits Miss Havisham's for the first time. Now, I know we discussed this a little bit before, Mr. Leap. That visit to, I guess you could call it the other side of the tracks, seeing how the other half lives, the nobility, the gentry, and Miss Havisham's contempt towards men. When she gets her claws into him, she develops in him the seeds of dissatisfaction with his life. And I think those seeds of dissatisfaction are what really drive him forward in his character progression. He is a very passive character, and he allows others to really direct the course of his life. And although the windfall certainly changes his life physically, I think it's the corruption that Miss Havisham puts upon Pip that really changes him mentally as a person.
Okay, well, let's throw that out. I mean, let me ask a question. You know, I didn't do this to him when we were talking about it, but I was planning. So let's talk about Magwitch. Okay, so you have Estelle embarrass him, tell him he's just a common laborer boy. Would that have stopped Magwitch's giving him money and trying to get him to be a gentleman? So let's throw it open.
When you think about the fact, what if you were to take Ms. Havisham out of the picture altogether? What would be the effect then of this change in fortune on behalf of Pip? Because he wouldn't have assumed that it came through Miss Havisham anymore. Right. He wouldn't really have known where it came from. It came from some donor somewhere. But how would that have changed his development as a character? Would he have still had the same difficulties in dealing with the fact that now he has money and that puts him in a different way of life than he had before? Or would he still have the same level of dissatisfaction as he got when he was in with Miss Havisham and Estella? You wonder about that. They provided certainly a catalyst for that dissatisfaction, but that probably would have developed over time with the fact that he had now a new standing in life based on the fact that he had wealth. You know, even though he assumed that it came from the place that it did not come from, but you wonder how that would have affected his life. Probably Miss Havisham served in it, and Estella served as a catalyst for those emotions to come forward earlier than they would have.
Okay, George, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's my view. I think if you take those Miss Havisham out of the picture, I see the worst in people usually, and I still think Pip would have done the wrong thing in the end. He would have had that coming of age section where he needed to be mean. He needed to be a lousy human being. I think what Mr. Hope is saying, Mrs. Havisham, was the way Dickens catalysted it. But I still think it would have happened if she wasn't there, because that's what people do. And I think the why he did it with Miss Havisham and Estella was because it provided multiple reasons for us to assume that it wasn't Pip who was doing this. He was being manipulated, or Estella, it allows us to put the blame on other people, which is also wrong, because Pip had his own choices and Pip could have done the right thing. It's his choice in the end, no matter how much people influence you. And I think of Pip as a piece of metal, and this goes along with Joe as well, because I think Joe is a really amazing character. But the whole idea, like, Joe's a blacksmith, he works with metal, he bends it, he shapes it, he changes it. But Mrs. Havisham is a blacksmith as well, just with people, and she bends them and she twists them and she shapes them. And all Pip needed to do was come under Joe, and he could have been shaped the right way, he could have been built the right way. Yeah, there would have been heat, yeah, there would have been pressure, but he would have come out better. He went under Miss Havisham, he willingly did that. And that shows you a character flaw to begin with. He couldn't see Joe's goodness to begin with. He kind of saw it, he enjoyed it, but as soon as something else came along, he went with it. And you take away Mrs. Havisham, he would have done that with someone else anyway.
Okay.
And so, yeah, like Mrs. Yep. Havisham bent him and shaped him, but, you know, thing with metal is you can re-bend it and shape it, like, in the end, but it would have been so much easier if we just let Joe build him up.
Okay. Jack, rebuttal.
Well, I think you just made my point there by saying if Miss Havisham wasn't the big influence that she was, then he probably would have stayed closer to Joe, and I think he would have been better off for it. That just goes to prove my point of view that Miss Havisham was the large corrupting influence.
Okay, I have another bone to throw at you, Jack. So can't forget Mrs. Joe. Okay, so now we all pick on Miss Havisham as being the bad woman. Okay, so if you put Magwitch in, he's going to do what he's going to do anyway. He's decided, and we know that at the end of the story, he decided as soon as he got to New Zealand, he was going to save all his money to help Pip get out of, you know, his situation. So don't you think Mrs. Joe also was driving him out of a situation? So even if Miss Havisham wasn't there, the fact that his sister was absolutely horrid to him would make him want that money even more to get out of that situation. So, okay. Jack.
Yeah, I think she was probably the reason why he's such a passive character. She constantly belittled him. He was always not a person to her, but more of a problem. I think that's probably why he's so passive, why later on in his life he was so led by other people.
Okay. Okay, George.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. I didn't back your point up with what I said. What I was saying was Mrs. Havisham was the catalyst, but I still think Pip would have done what he did without her. So you take her out of the way, he would have done it a different way because he chose not to go under Joe. He chose to follow Miss Havisham. That was his choice. You take her out of the way, he would have chosen to do it with someone else. He would have used Mrs. Joe as an excuse to get away as soon as he got money. He would have had the money and maybe he was like, well, I want to try something different. I don't want to be under Joe. He would have chosen that because he had to make that choice to realize that it was the wrong one because this whole book is a reflection.
Okay.
And he wouldn't have known otherwise.
All right, good. Well, I just want to make one final comment and we're going to end this discussion with my comments because since I'm the host, I can do this. So, okay. Let's not forget who is the one that set him up with Mrs. Havisham in the beginning anyway. It was Pumblechook and his mother, his sister. They're the ones that got it. Remember, they came back to the house all excited. He had no choice. Pip didn't have a choice. He was going there. Now, it's Miss Havisham that requested him, but Mrs. Joe wanted him to be in that society. And even when he came back, he was had great honor because I think everybody else in that little town also wanted his opportunity and didn't have it. So, okay, let's move on now. Let's move on to Joe. I think Joe is I've known several Joes in my life that have helped me along the way. So let's talk about Joe.
Well, so. Joe is one of those characters that has just unconditional love. And that's what's so good that, you know, he needs to be there because Pip has this, you know, shrewish sister. And so having Joe obviously fills that need that he has. But he has all the qualities of someone that you'd want to have, you know, as a guardian. He's someone there that, you know, you can talk with, who listens to you, who sort of protects you. And he was the protector for Pip as a young child against the terrible badgering of his sister. So he plays an important role all through Pip's life, actually, as sort of this stable love force that's there.
Yeah, I think one of the most noble parts of Joe's character is when he defends his wife to Pip.
Right.
Because Pip, you can tell Pip's thinking, man, this is a witch. Right. And he's saying, now look, Pip, he said, she's a good woman, she's a fine woman. And, of course, Pip wants to, like, stick his finger down his throat and say, you're gagging me, Joe. Right. You know, she's not that way. But he really was loyal to her. And in some ways, it took as we talked in the last couple programs, it took Orlick clubbing her over the head to kind of get her to change. She does change. But she had to have the hammer, you know, to get her to change. So okay, Jack, let's talk about Joe.
Yeah, what I love about Joe, although he takes it a little far, I think he strives really hard to be different from his father. He explains this to Pip early in the book, that his father was abusive towards his mother, was an alcoholic. And so Joe grew up with that. And when he was eventually a man and he was married, he strove very hard to be the exact opposite of that, that example that he grew up with. I think that's a very noble trait to learn from the mistakes of his forebears.
Now remember, here we're talking about this man, but he's a made-up character. So what does it show about Dickens' mind? I mean, he had to not only create the character Joe, he had to create his past so that he could come back to the past and talk about it. Yeah, my dad was abusive, and he abused my mom. And I mean, so in almost, and I have taken some classes on character writing, where you almost have to develop their whole genealogy. You have to go back several generations and develop this if you're going to make them a living character. So, okay, George.
Yeah, I agree with what's been said. I do think what intrigues me about Joe in terms of his history is I think he could have done more to stop Mrs. Joe from hurting Pip. And he did try, and the book lets us know that he did try. He did subtle things, but I do think that's a testament to how much, there can be scars and there can be pain, because Joe went through what Pip was going through, and you would think that Joe would want to stop it completely, not just nullify some of it or subtly do it, but you would think that Joe would want to stamp it out completely and then take control and be like, no. But I do think that's a part of his character in terms of defending her. I do think that was very noble, like how he did stand up and say that. I was very shocked when I first read that. I was like, whoa. This guy really does have a lot of character, and you can just see that throughout the whole book. And his character, it's very rare for me to like a good character in a book, because I'm like, it's not in real life, it's hard for me to like picture it. But with Joe, I did feel like he was in a room with me sometimes, and he was comforting me, or he was talking to me. Like you said, he's a made-up character, but you could feel his presence, because I think it's the presence that everyone wants. It might not be what we all have in life or what people experience in life, but Joe was the type of character that he was just a simple, relatable character that we would all love to know and we would all love to have around us. And I think that fact, Dickens was able to maybe analyze his own life and see what he didn't get. I mean, he had to go to work at a young age, with the blacking factory and all that. Okay. So I can imagine he probably tuned into his life and was like, okay, what is the type of person I wanted around me? And he created Joe.
Right. Yeah, I think we could be safe in assuming that, I mean, Dickens did have a full life in the sense that, he had to work at 12, in a blacking factory. But then, his father did come into some money later. And so he did cross the lines from poverty into middle class. And then, of course, he became very wealthy, where essentially he was supporting his whole family, and they kept hounding him for money because he had so much. But I think we could safely say that he knew someone like Joe, and he knew someone like Miss Havisham, and he knew someone like Herbert, and he knew someone like Jaggers. Those are things I think we can assume, but he was just able to really build on it and make these characters, just flesh them out and make them, really living characters. So go ahead.
It's interesting, I think, how he makes the male characters possess the dimension that's lacking in the female characters. Because you would expect the nurturing and the caring and those kinds of things to come from the female characters, but they don't.
No.
They come from the male characters. The female characters are, for the most part, devoid of those, which makes an interesting sort of...
Yeah, and I think that's the techniques he uses to us to look at the characters more. If you look at even Mrs. Joe, I often wondered, is that why he was so enthralled with Estelle? Because she was just like her in the sense that she was hard and cold, but yet I imagine Mrs. Joe would have been quite plain. But here Estelle is just stunning, and so is that why he's so drawn to her? It's almost like you love what you hate. It's really kind of a crazy thing. George, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that a lot as well about this book, because you have Mrs. Joe and Estelle, and you compare them, and it's like both... I mean, I think Mrs. Joe is less cold and hard as Estella is, but You're right. Why would Pip want that in his life? Wouldn't you think he would want someone like Biddy who he can talk to and all that? But it's like you train up a child and know where they'll go. And all he's ever known is Mrs. Joe. All he's ever known is that type of woman. And I feel like that's part of why he grows up. And he's like, you know, that's what I deserve, or that's what I'm going to have because that's what I've always had type thing. And it's, again, those extremes. He goes for the extremes. Even his characters are drawn to the extremes.
Yeah, Joe is really the antithesis of Pip in that regards in terms of contentment, I think. I mean, Pip is very discontented with his lot in life, but Joe is the epitome of contentment. I think that is going to that extremes that George just brought out in Dickens' work. I think that it's a great theme that's brought up in the character of Pip and Joe, just this highlighting this difference between being content with your lot in life and wanting more, and the balance need to strike between the two.
Yes, yes. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Wemmick. I mean, here we have these tragic families in the book, and yet Dickens, I almost wanted to call him Shakespeare, but Dickens gives us this relaxed scene with Wemmick and the aged, you know. So let's talk about him. It's almost like, if you look at it, I think Dickens does give, of course, we know that Pip is an orphan, but it's like he gives us a whole selection of dads. You know, it's like even Magwitch says, I'm his second dad. You know, Joe is like his second dad. But I think Wemmick is like his second dad. You know, even Jaggers could be like his second dad. So you have this Pip, the young guy, but he's got all these male figures to help him. And so I think, you know, I look at Wemmick as that. He is like this bright spot. He can go out to the castle. You know, he can get in there, and I think he can feel safe. And so that's my view. So what's your view of Wemmick? So,
well, I think Pip really likes Wemmick because he mentions it a few times how he'd rather 1,000 times over have dinner with Wemmick than with Jaggers. So he really likes his company. And I think Wemmick is a fascinating character from the standpoint that he has this sort of perfect division between business life and personal life. So personal life is the way things are handled on one side, and the two don't cross over. You don't bring your personal life into your business life or vice versa. And he makes that very clear distinction. Whereas Pip, it's all one unit. It's all together. And so you see sort of Pip with the fullness of life with this character who's got it so clearly and distinctly divided. And there is one occasion in the book where those two start to cross a little bit. You wonder how that's going to happen, how Wemmick is going to respond to that. And he doesn't respond to it as violently as I thought that he would. But he does show when those two worlds start to link together that there can be some tension with that.
Yeah, probably.
But he's an interesting character. And I think Dickens deals with him in a very humorous way, and the way he describes him as well, and keeps repeating that description.
But I also think there's this one touching scene where, you know, Pip has to go out of the house to get some advice, and then Clara's there, and the agent is there, and, you know, they're having the agent read the news, which I think must have been hilarious. But you see Wemmick trying to hug Clara, and so it's like you never see any emotional warmth between Joe and Mrs. Joe. No, you don't see it ever between, well, with Mrs. Havisham. She just wants to watch them play cards, you know. But here, it's almost like Dickens is saying that, well, Pip could have seen, you know, touching romance or touching kindness or, you know, touching togetherness. He sees it with them, you know, but then towards the end, he doesn't receive that himself, you know. So, but it was there for him. You know, to see. So anyway, I think that was a very touching scene. So
it is, and that scene is so different than the same Wemmick that you see in The Office.
Oh yeah.
Where he's totally emotionless, you know. Could care less about the emotional side of things.
In the movie that we watched, it was really good because he was kind of like just totally dry, you know, it's like toast without butter. You know, it was just like, man, this is scratchy, you know, kind of thing. Go ahead, Jack.
Perhaps Wemmick could be said to really be the epitome of that point that, was it Smiley?
Jane Smiley.
The quote you read out about Dickens really being able to show both the inner world and the outer world. You have Wemmick epitomizing both sides of that. His profession, he is portraying the world at the time of the Industrial Revolution, but we also get to see his private life and get to see what it's like for families in this particular time in the world. It's such a human moment that when Pip visits the castle with the aged one and Clara and...
It's awesome. Yeah, it's really awesome. Because sometimes you don't get that view of British society, even if you visit Britain today, sometimes everything can seem very cold, but it really isn't that way. You know, it's cold publicly, or it's very stilted publicly, but personally, it's not like that. And I've been there enough that I know that's true. Okay, George, any last comment on when? Okay, let's talk about Herbert quickly. We have 35 seconds to talk about Herbert.
Well, Herbert is a great colleague, friend. Just as Joe is sort of the affectionate but ineffectual parent. Herbert is a great friend and colleague. They're the same age, obviously. And so that provides with Pip with another set of emotional strengths that he didn't have as a child. And it's certainly good to see that, read about that friendship that they share, and then how Pip actually helps Herbert without his knowing it.
Right.
That it's really this altruistic step that he gives in helping him so much, and then how that turns around and rewards Pip in the end.
Pip does have good qualities. He really, I don't think we're painting him bad. But the thing about Herbert that I liked so much was, especially their discussions about Estelle. He says, "What? I mean, he was there to tell him, what are you doing? Why do you even care about this? Why do you keep?" Like letting her tramp on your heart like you do. And so, but he did it in a very British way. You know, he did it, you know, it's like he wouldn't be really direct, but he would make him think. And so, again, I think everyone needs a friend like Herbert. Everyone that can, where Herbert can actually look at the whole situation and then say, well, hey, you know, this just isn't the best way to go. Well, again, looks like we're running out of time. And I'm very sad to say we're going to be done with our discussion of Great Expectations. There is so much in this book. There is no, you could do 10 programs on it and you still wouldn't get through it all. So I'd very much like to hear what you have to say about our Summer of Classics series. And next time I'll be introducing Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And at the time this was printed, it was a science phenomenon. So we'll be talking about that, and we're going to invite Sarah Evans back to talk about the science aspects to this book. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.